Welcome to 50 Tastes of Grey. My name is Matthew Grey, and I explore the intersection of food, tech, and lifestyle. Today, I'm joined by a special guest who's a maestro of modern technology, a wizard of workarounds, and a connoisseur of consumer electronics. He's the man behind the meteoric rise of Nico Knows Tech, a channel that's not just about gadgets, but about enriching lives with tech solutions and entertainment. From a humble beginning to thousands of subscribers, Nico's journey is nothing short of remarkable. His dedication for creating content that resonates with his audience has turned this channel into a beacon for tech enthusiasts. Whether it's avoiding the pitfalls of demonetization or diving into the future of computing with mini PCs, Nico's insights are invaluable. And let's not forget, he's a culinary adventurer too. Who else could reveal the secret to perfect potatoes with a touch of movie magic? From Hawaii to Texas and now headquartered in Costa Rica, Nico's multilingual talents and tech tips have captivated viewers worldwide. So buckle up as we dive into a conversation with Nico from Nico Knows Tech. We'll uncover secrets of YouTube success, discover the power of VPNs for your smart devices, and maybe even get a taste of duck fat fries. All this and more right here on 50 Tastes of Grey. So let's give a warm welcome to Nico from Nico Knows Tech. Enjoy. A mutual friend of ours, Scott Merrill, the guy who does Ask Your Computer Guy, put us together, and it was like bang, bang, you and I getting together. So I'm really excited to have you on the show today. And probably won't spend a lot of time talking about computers, but I am really interested in finding out before we begin the show, just asking you, what have you eaten today?
So probably not the best meal for me to start a food podcast. I had McDonald's because when in Costa Rica, you order McDonald's and Uber Eats, right? So I was in a hurry this morning. I took my kid to his little preschool, which is kind of like where they learn a lot of stuff. And then I came back home and I had to get something quick. And then I had this podcast also. So I had McDonald's.
Wild. Now, which specific items at McDonald's did you order? And is the Costa Rican version of McDonald's different than it is worldwide?
Great question. So I had the fish sandwich, the Filet-O-Fish, because it's Lent and this is a Catholic country. So it's very different. Not always in the taste, but the menu significantly different. But this might surprise you. So in the United States, French fries, McDonald's French fries have like 15 ingredients and one of them's metal. In outside the United States and Costa Rica included, there's three ingredients. There's oil, potatoes, and salt.
Back in the day, they used to fry McDonald's French fries in beef tallow. And vegans did not know about that, or vegetarians didn't know about that. And that would be the only item that they would eat when they went to McDonald's. And then all of a sudden, the news came out and the media started saying, you know what? Those wonderful French fries that McDonald's does is served in beef fat. And there was like a total shit show blowout amongst the vegetarians in the United States. Do you know that story?
No, I didn't. But that sounds amazing because I don't know if you watch on YouTube Guga Foods. He's like a steak connoisseur. Oh, yeah. He's really popular. And he like will fry things in Wagyu beef tallow and bone marrow, which he calls the butter of the gods. I'm like, that would be a great way. That makes me want to make French fries that way. But yeah, that might set off some vegans.
Duck fat has been a wonderful medium for frying stuff for a long time. There are places here that do duck fat fries.
It's interesting that you bring up duck fat because duck fat potatoes took up a big jump in popularity after one of the John Wick films where the villain, right before John Wicks him, he's saying he's eating a potato and he's duck fat. Makes all the difference in the world. And they do a zoom in, kind of like in The Matrix where they're zooming in on the steak. Yeah, that was, and then everyone's like, I didn't know you used duck fat. No one thinks, you know, that doesn't usually come to everybody's minds unless you're a foodie.
John Wicked him.
I try to be content friendly because I'm on YouTube. So there's some words that trigger the automated algorithm. Like if you say like a news story, you're commenting on something that was on CNN and you say killed, you might get that partially demonetized automatically. And then you'd have to fight to get it, remonetized instead of before John Wick took him out, John Wicked him.
He's been erased.
And a lot of YouTubers have started rewording. Like they'll say unalive. You might have seen that kind of popular on TikTok. He got unalived. And
even if you mark your stuff not made for kids, you'll still get copyrighted or flagged?
No. So you can post 18 plus content, but you have to label it as such, but it still limits your audience and it does limit your monetization because there's some companies and everything's about advertisers. It's a business. That's why YouTube's free for the most part. It is maybe Toyota doesn't want to be on a heavily violent video. Mm-hmm. Or an 18 plus, or, you know, so advertisers will specify, do I want to be on 18 plus or only the E for everybody?
I drop the occasional F-bomb every now and again. My language is pretty loose and friendly and warm and crazy. Is that something that if I were to ever be able to monetize this kind of a program, would that be something I'd want to pay attention to and not do the F-bombs?
You can get away with a couple of F-bombs if you wait about a minute after the start of the video. But if you space it out, you know, a minute, minute and a half after, you can get away with a little bit of that as long as it's not overly excessive.
So, okay, I want to ask you about your show. I got to enjoy watching you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your show, how many subscribers you have, how long you've been doing this whole thing, because you definitely sound like you're a pro. Hey, by the way, before you answer that question, what is that you just took a puff of?
That's my vape. It's just nicotine. When I was in the Navy, I smoked cigarettes and went to vape when they became popular.
The nicotine that's in there, that's in like a chemical form, a synthetic form, or how does that work?
It's nicotine salts. So It's derived from tobacco. It's extracted chemically. It's not synthetically generated out of thin air, but yeah.
So when you vape, are you doing it for the nicotine buzz or rush, or is it because you enjoy the flavor, or is it a hand-to-mouth thing, or what kind of a habit has it become?
I think it's just nicotine addiction. I haven't had a buzz from nicotine since I was 16 years old.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, you know, I've got my espresso here so that I get my buzz from that.
I lived in Italy when I was in the Navy, and I just got addicted to espresso.
So tell us, how do you take your espresso when you order it? Do you just take it straight?
So I like a good bit of sugar for the espresso shot. I like a double and I like it macchiato, not Starbucks macchiato. Italian macchiato is a drop of steamed milk. When you order a macchiato at Starbucks, you get a glass about this tall with ice in it.
Right. So. At home, are you personally a coffee fan? Do you make espresso at home, grind your own beans, roast your own beans, any of that?
So I live in a coffee country now in Costa Rica.
Right.
So I take coffee a lot of different ways. So I'll make my own espresso in the afternoon sometimes if I'm not having afternoon coffee with the missus. And I have my maca. It's the Italian stovetop kind. It's almost espresso is what we call it.
It's sort of like that shapely pot, right? It looks like a woman's figure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But there's coffee plantations and coffee tours where I do that sometimes just for fun, for the kind of the tourist effect.
So yeah. it's a lighter roast in Latin America with more fruity flavors and along those lines?
For the most part, there are exceptions. So Nicaragua will have a bit of a stronger coffee, various other countries. So Costa Rican coffee would probably be closest to Colombian coffee.
Drinking hot coffee in the middle of a hot day in the climate like that probably would work in cooling you down, just like the hot chilies around the world. They make you sweat, but that's a good thing because it's cooling off your body when you think about it.
Kind of a paradox, isn't it?
It is a paradox, but it's interesting to learn these things, isn't it? We are going to talk about your show, but you keep on bringing up all these interesting points. So I want to keep pressing on those things. How does a white American boy find himself in Costa Rica? Are you an American citizen or are you a Costa Rican citizen? You have dual citizenship?
So I will have dual citizenship. I'm a permanent resident. So several reasons. Even when I was a kid, I was fascinated with Costa Rica. I was a bit of a bookworm and I was a science nerd. I loved, you know, the rainforest was this mystical place. And I also, you know, grew up in the 80s and 90s where we had stores like Natural Wonders in the mall that was selling all these rainforest CDs and all this. And everything, rainforest was kind of becoming new then because we were stopping deforestation. You know, we were stopping buying pencils and paper made from rainforest wood. So rainforest was a big thing.
To go from one paradise, you know, Hawaii, to Costa Rica, which is another paradise. Are you bilingual or multilingual? Are you polyglot?
Yeah, I speak pretty good Italian, not great, but the Italians wouldn't think so because I mix it with Neapolitan, which is a completely different language, which if you're not in Naples, they don't like it. So I can't really tell the difference as much. So I picked it up while living there, and I'm getting better at Spanish. Apparently my accent's good because no one knows that I'm American until I tell them. They just assume that I'm a fair-skinned, blue-eyed Costa Rican. Also, I don't live in a tourist area. I'm in the thick with the locals, so there's no gringos here.
How does Spanish differ in Costa Rica than it does in other countries that speak Spanish?
Costa Ricans are very polite, relaxed, but not too informal all the time. They have their own words, but it's very friendly and positive. If you go to places like certain places in Mexico, it's a lot of challenging, a lot of bravado, a lot of machismo going on. So a lot of some sarcasm in there. It's different. So it's kind of the more mentality of the Costa Rican. So it's different from Mexico a lot. It's very friendly, very welcoming. They like Americans. You know, you can go to some Latin American countries where you stick out and they're like, hey, where are you doing? Hey, wrong neighborhood, you know. Or you just get, you know, like, oh, this is the rich guy. Let's go see if we can get him to buy something. Costa Rican is just so relaxed.
Your skin color does not present any issues culturally or significantly in any other way?
Americans are really well liked. They're assumed to be wealthy, powerful, well-connected people.
Tell us a little bit about your show, because I'm really enjoying watching it, and you have great delivery and a good style. So we'll get back to all the other stuff after that.
Sure. Well, it's Nico Knows Tech, which is pretty broad, but do a lot of tech reviews, a lot of tutorials, a lot of how to do this with computers, how to do this, and a lot of audio stuff. But that's, you know, I wanted to do more diverse stuff into technology everywhere, but you don't always get to pick what you're going to put on your channel. Whatever takes off, you're going to be doing more of that, or you won't get views, you know. So, yeah, a lot of stuff. I'm probably best known for my tutorial that teaches you how to remove any virus from Windows in one step. Literally, it fixes Windows, removes any virus that's there, optimizes performance, fixes any errors going on, and it actually works. Now, you say a tag like that, they're like, this is a scam. This is too good to be true.
Right.
But found a way to make it work. And I worked in the tech repair industry for a while, and we use automation tools, usually proprietary, but they're going to automate this stuff so that I can work on 50 machines in a day by doing all these repetitive tasks that every IT would do to fix a machine. Mm-hmm. And the gatekeeper of the tech industry will only want to sell you this. If you want us to do that, you're going to pay us hundreds of dollars. And what inspired me to do that was actually spite. It was this, I'm going off on a tangent, but it'll make sense. So this was right before like peak COVID. I was at a PC repair shop to take in my Samsung laptop that needed a screen replacement, which was covered by warranty, and they were authorized place. And then you can bring in your stuff to get fixed. There's a lady in front of me holding her HP laptop. And I've been in this industry for a while. And she opens up her laptop, presses the power button, and nothing happens. Little blue lights on the keyboard turn on, but the screen turns on but stays black. And it doesn't move past that. It just stays there and it doesn't ever do that. She can leave it on for hours. This young fella behind the counter says, looks like your motherboard. And she says, oh dear, what's that? He's like, that's like your whole computer. And she's like, oh, what's that going to cost? And then he's like, oh, I have to see. I chimed in and said $387. I happen to know that. And also one of my gifts in my channel is I have a really good memory of really weird facts. But he's like, oh, well, that might be what it costs. Plus diagnostic and repair parts and labor. And I said, excuse me, young man, parts and labor, what parts are you going to lose? You already soldered the motherboard. You're going to lose a screw?
Right.
The parts are already there. And he's like, yeah, no, but there's also diagnostic and repair. Why are you charging her two labor charges? And also the diagnostic, which you already finished with your magic psychic powers without a motherboard tester. What are you doing here, dude? And he said, sir, if you don't need help, you can wait outside. And so I said, okay, no problem. Ma'am, once you're done here, if you like, I can fix that for you in 15 seconds for free. Wow. I walked outside. She came out to me. Sir, can you really help me? Sure. I turned it upside down, took the battery out, pressed the power button a few times, popped the battery back in and handed it to her. And I said, it was a hibernation lock. Your computer was hibernating and then the battery died. It didn't know to do a new boot. And he's like, can I pay you for this? No, we charge like $15 for that for a quick fix in the shop, but I don't work for a tech shop. And he's like, oh, wow, thank you. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to teach people to do this stuff that they're getting ripped off for. Mm-hmm. Because if you have one virus, that I could teach you to remove in 10 minutes. Why do you need to be falling under that blanket $200 fee at Geek Squad or somewhere when you don't have that bad of infection? Because if you had 10,000 viruses, it's $200. Why is it $200 for the one that takes 10 minutes to remove?
Yeah.
They have one fee for everything. So that's a great business. But when I worked at Geek Squad, we had to know what we're doing. Now, I'm not saying that those guys don't deserve their jobs. The company is not requiring as high of standards. And I said, you know what? If they're going to half-ass this stuff, I'm going to put them out of business by giving them a YouTube video where they can do it themselves. You're going to have to step up your game to stay in that business. And so a lot of my channel is solving problems by giving you a solution that may be something in the tech shop, something very advanced, but I'll break it down to where you can do it. You have no requirements of what to do, of what to know before. You can do, if you need it done, you can get it done here.
So Nico, after your serendipitous encounter with this young lady who you helped out, did you just keep walking for yourself and not take care of your Samsung at that place?
Oh, I went and picked it up and the guy wasn't too happy with me. And I'm a veteran. So when you're another man, don't look at another man a certain way. He's like, hey, I'm here to pick up my Samsung laptop. Oh, you again. Be like, you check your tone, man, or I'm going to be talking to corporate. He's like, you can go talk to corporate. Okay. All you had to do was zip it. Give me my laptop. And then I talked to corporate and they were like, yeah, well, you were doing this and this. Like, you know what? You don't get to tell me what I was doing. Do you want to be famous? So that was how that went.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. That's a great story, isn't it?
This is a fascinating topic.
Now, I'm a dinosaur, Nico. So, you know, I use the computer a lot, like we're on right now, mm-hmm. and I watch a lot of YouTube as well. But I also will sit in front of the television and plug in. How can I utilize the power and the benefit of a VPN if I'm watching you on a television? Or is excellent there question. No way to do that?
That's an excellent question. I'm going to be covering the more complicated one of these in a video this week. But the easiest way is a VPN. So smart TVs, which are notoriously unprivate, by the way, mm-hmm. Connect, you know, we live in a connected world where they say everything you take home and connect to your Wi-Fi. That is so dangerous. I like to call Internet of Things, which includes smart TVs, Alexa, all that stuff. Those are the Internet of Things. That's not a computer that's operated by a person. I call it the Internet of Insecure Things. Uh-huh. What I love about Costa Rica is, like, down here, I can get like darn near 3,000 square feet, 4-bedroom house with a backyard, gated community, for around $850.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Yeah.
So, and you can go cheaper than that too. If you don't want to go too fancy, like mine, that's kind of fancy there. You can also go really high. Like there's some people that are, you know, some wealthy Americans that come down here and invest, and they will have, you know, mansions with 20 bedrooms and pools and on the beach. But those will be, you know, a couple million dollars. But when you compare that would be around 50 million in Miami. Mm-hmm. You know, so
are you seeing the expat community grow by leaps and bounds because of the price differential?
So that's part of it. As far as Latin America goes, Costa Rica is one of the most expensive countries in Latin America, which still makes it 60% cheaper than the United States. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, a lot of Americans come down here because first off, it's extremely safe. It's safer than most, you know, places that in big cities in the United States. I don't even carry a gun here. And I was a Texan that carried a gun around San Antonio. Why? Because right. I was Texan. I don't even think about it here. That's not something that you kind of goes through your head. Extremely safe for tourists. Like, unlike, I hate to talk bad about other, you know, Latin American countries. It's just the way things are. But in Colombia is a whole nother world. Right. There were 14 Americans that were unalived in this just this year in one city in Colombia. And so that's kind of going through some trouble there. But Costa Rica, that doesn't happen. It's just so safe. It's so fun. It's affordable. It's also a short flight. So it's like 2.5 hours south of Houston. And wow. The average flight for round trip is like $350 in the low season.
Huh.
So I can go to the United States for a weekend to go get something. I'm so tempted to just fly back to Texas to get a brisket sandwich and then come back on Monday.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Tell us a little bit about the food in Costa Rica. What are the most popular foods and spices that are used there?
So it's really diverse. The most notable things is their staple foods, the typical foods. So every morning, you know, breakfast is gallo pinto. which is beans and rice, which is fried. So it's kind of cool. And then they love their tropical fruits. They love their tropical fruits. You can find tropical fruit drinks everywhere. You can always get coffee, obviously. But any restaurant you go, any cafe you go, they have frescos, is what they call them. And they'll be, you can get pineapple, maracuja, guava, every type of fruit you've heard of, as well as stuff you've never heard of that's only native to the region. Like one of my favorites is cas. It's Costa Rican guava, essentially. Uh-huh. It's a sweet and sour kind of very refreshing beverage. It's about the size of a lemon and they're green. The juice and the drink you make from that, it cools you down. It doesn't taste like mint, but just like how tea cools you down.
Yeah.
You could be in the hottest part of the country and cool down instantly with some gas. So the eggs are not even refrigerated here because they get here so fresh and they're all clean. And do you remember the old days when your mom was making a cake and she put eggs in there and you could still lick the spoon, but now you get salmonella? Right. It's still like the old days down here.
How about you in the kitchen? Can you handle yourself?
Yeah, I don't cook Costa Rican food yet, but I made my own cottage cheese the day before yesterday. Because you don't get cottage cheese here. So I'm going to make my own. Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. That sounds really good. So what is the wine scene like there?
So they're really big on Chilean wines and Argentinian wines down here. Uh-huh. But Chilean wine is like Chile is like the Napa Valley of South America.
Remember the old days when Cokes came in a bottle? They always taste better than when the cans were introduced.
Two things going on there. So you can still get them bottled, but they're in Mexico. If you get soda outside the United States, they're using real sugar and they're not using high fructose corn syrup. So that there was, when they were bottling in glass and when you were still getting them bottled in the 90s, when you could find them case delivered, especially in Texas, they were coming from Mexico and they had the real sugar. Mm-hmm. So if they were bottling them for you, it was the old way. And if you were getting them canned or dispensed, they were the new way. And now they're all the new way except abroad.
Changing subjects for a moment. What do you think of all these new mini PCs? Because that's what I just picked myself up. And it seems to be power packed. It's like a beast. And this is Nico turning around and he's grabbing some stuff off of his shelf right now. Thank you, buddy.
But this one.
Okay.
And I got this one here.
Yeah, the one in your left hand there looks like the one I have. I got one from Minis Forum. Is that what it's called?
So there is about five manufacturers of these, but everyone that you get to buy from is a sticker company.
Oh, tell us about that.
So if I want to make a mini PC that's called the Nico PC, I go contact one of those five manufacturers and give them my logo and say I want 10,000 units and... But they'll put whatever sticker I want on there. I'm a sticker
manufacturer.
Private
label.
So that's the way the Chinese electronics company, the industry works. Mm-hmm. So that's why when you look up true wireless earbuds, you're going to get 10,000 results in Amazon and most of them look the same. You can actually get a darn good deal for like $350 and get like a really high-end rig with a lot of memory and a lot of stuff.
I'm super happy with it. It's lightning fast and it's tiny and it looks more like something from future than it does from today. Because, you know, I'm from the day when computers were gigantic, had to lug them, they were heavy. And so now they're just tiny. But when you think about it, your cell phone is like this small anyway. So
there's a lot of cool things you can do with a mini PC in addition to the desktop use that you're mentioning there. Because sure, you can just have your little monitor, how big are you on the monitor? When you have this little tiny box that fits in the palm of your hand is an entire desktop PC. That is amazing. But you often, if you turn those mini PCs upside down, you'll see there's mounting points there. You can mount them behind a smart TV and you have a full i7, you know, Intel PC with 32 gigs of RAM and a terabyte hard drive in it and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And then you could be sitting on your couch like the old days of web PC. Remember that didn't take off? You have a wireless keyboard and mouse, and they even have little keyboards that are this big that fit like the size of a cell phone that have a little touchpad, and you can literally be controlling your whole TV, surfing the web, downloading whatever you want instead of just doing the smart TV.
I think everybody should definitely tune into your channel because you've already brought up like a half a dozen things that I'm going to go watch right away.
I appreciate that.
Any last shots, any parting shots you want to give our audience? Because, you know, this is a little bit of a different audience for you. And, you know, a lot of us definitely need the help that you can give. But is there anything you wanted to talk about in the last couple moments we have?
I'm just a YouTube content creator that talks about tech stuff. But, you know, I'm interested in lots of things. When Scott told me about you, he said, you know, we're going to be talking about food the whole time. And I was like, that's okay. That'll be a good change of pace. I was actually surprised that we took a pivot into technology a bit, but I'm glad that we could, because I got to show that anybody can kind of do this. It's not just because there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, I don't have to know how to take apart the engine of a car in order to drive it to work.
Right, right.
You know, so, I mean, oftentimes you just need the important bits.
You know, it's interesting. Scott's channel is about to hit 100,000 subscribers, which is really exciting and very cool. And he and I have been kind of toying around, playing around, getting close these last many weeks. And so when he was on the show, we really just barely touched on technology. And so just yesterday I said, yeah, Nico's coming on. He goes, oh, I'm so stoked about that. And I said, we probably won't be talking much computer stuff. And like, it turns out that we talked mostly computer stuff today and not food stuff.
That's cool. Did Scott tell you how we met?
Nobody said you guys go way back. Do tell. Let the cat out of the bag, Nico.
Okay. No, it's really good. I have to throw that out there because he has more subscribers than me. He's about to get his silver play button and I'm at 58,000. He's at about to hit 100,000 probably in a week. When I met him, I had 25,000 subscribers and he made a video in a topic that I had covered and I liked his video. He had about 400 or 500 subscribers. He was a tiny tuber still. But I knew that this guy was going to be big. So I reached out to him and said, hey, I'd love to collaborate with you. Can we talk and stuff? I think we would be able to mix and make some good content together. YouTube's a bit different. It's not as competitive as some other platforms because the YouTube viewer is a binge watcher. They don't want just my stuff. They want that guy, that guy, that guy, everything about that topic. Mm-hmm. They want to keep watching it on an autoplay. And he said, yeah, sure. Wow. Oh, wow. Big YouTuber. You know, well, maybe at that time. And he's like, why did you want to work with me? You're so big. And I'm like, because I want to collab with you before you're too famous and don't want to talk to me. I literally told him that. And he doubted himself for a long time, but we became friends. We were talking. Even though we've only been together in each other's videos one time, we're talking all the time, strategizing about what we're going to do next because we have overlapping stuff and two different audiences. But he's an extremely hard worker and has busted his tail to make everything in his life work out. And it wasn't always easy for him. I don't want to get too much into his personal life, but some real life was starting to get in the way and YouTube wasn't paying off yet. You know, it wasn't even paying for itself. It starts off as a money pit. You really bleed money getting started.
Yeah.
You know, as a podcast, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't start raining cash right away. And then I told him, don't you ever quit. And then he didn't quit. And then suddenly a video popped off and he's doing great. And then I was in a situation where I'm like, man, I don't know if I can still do this. You know, I was getting, you know, comments sometimes get under your skin, you know, like, man, they're being mean to me. And then he kept me going and he inspired me to, you know, collaborate with a video on him that worked out great for both of us. And yeah, I have enormous respect for him. I'm so happy for him, you know, because seeing him from when he was a guy that's just making content, but he's kept that mentality of I'm just trying to make good videos for people. That's the way you win. The audience will resonate with that. And he's absolutely
blew my mind, Nico, when he told me that a year ago he had like 3,000 subscribers and he's now right about now, like going to hit 100,000. It's like, how does that kind of growth even happen?
The boring answer is you go viral. So I went viral with a 2.6 million views on the video I told you about, removing viruses. Scott wanted to cover that topic, but he thought he would be stepping on my toes. And I said, no, make that video. You know this stuff. This is knowledge. It's not my invention. And I said, plus, there's 6.8 billion viewers on YouTube. 2.6 million of them saw it. How many people out there know it? Your viewers haven't seen it. Your viewers need this. You're doing them a disservice if you don't also do it. And he's like, oh, Nico, but that's your thing. No, it's not. It's your thing. Do it. And then he wanted to do it, but then I said, go ahead and do it. You're not going to be stepping on my toes. I'll be happy for you. And he did it, and then he got like 1 million views out of that. And Scott has a very special talent of connecting with the audience. Like, I make a good product and then I'll get subscribers out of that. Scott makes a good product, which is the video, but he also builds a strong following out of it. He's very good at connecting with his audience to where they want to see everything he has. Right. So he retains subscribers out of, like, if I get 1 million views on YouTube and maybe I get 1,000 subscribers out of that, Scott will get 5,000. Mm-hmm. So, like, that, just an example. And he's got a lot more than that out of that. Maybe I think he's might have got like 40,000 subscribers out of that. And that's something he does better than me, but I'm getting better.
So are you talking about, you're talking here, sounds like social skills and styles, not necessarily the content and the balls. And,
right. And, because you're dealing with people. Yeah. You're not dealing with, you know, machines and computers and the algorithm. It just serves to work with people. So if people connect with you, they want to subscribe. And the subscribe is a very important function because it says, I liked your video. It was great. I commented. Now I want to see the, I, when you upload something else, whatever it is, I want to know about it. That's a big deal. And a lot of people think, oh, subs. Yeah, I got 50 subs. I got 5,000 subs. No, that's people that are there. Now that I like that video, I also want to see everything else. Which, if you're just one hit wonder, why subscribe to you?
Are you getting more warm and fuzzy as far as your personality, your style in front of the camera?
I'm getting more organized. So mm-hmm. when I started this, I didn't have good camera presence. I wasn't a good speaker. I stammered and I had, you know, I was nervous. So I'd have little tics and stuff. I didn't make good eye contact with the camera. And I just over practice, I got, by doing it, I got better at speaking. I got better at controlling the flow of the conversation, of the dialogue, because, and I knew exactly, okay, now I'm going to do my intro. I'm going to do my hook. And then I'd write it or I'd script it or I'd just practice it, get it done. I get it done in a couple of takes. And then I was able to have kind of, I knew how to make a 15-minute video. I knew how to make a 6-minute video instead of just recording and then hitting the editor. I'm like, wow, this video is too long. So I just got better at it. That's what I've gotten better. You learn what works and what doesn't work. You watch your dislikes. You watch when you don't get views and you look at, well, that's the way you make it in this business. Because I can tell you how to grow my channel, but I can't tell you how to grow anyone else's channel because that's not how it's done. You got to put out feelers. I actually started 5 channels in my effort to be a YouTube content creator. One of them was gaming, another one was travel, and another one was guns, another one was martial arts. I have a lot of interests and things, but none of them took off. And then suddenly the tech channel took off. And I said, well, Nico, you're a tech YouTuber. So, and I started putting out feelers in that and seeing what works and people want to watch. And I may not only want to do tech tutorials, but that's what my viewers want. And that's what I got to give them.
Right. And you're good at it. So you deliver it well. And like you said, if the people want to see it, you're going to give it to them.
Well, thank you. That means a lot.
Well, that's really nice. I'm so glad we got to meet. And, you know, thanks to Scott putting me together with other really smart people and people who are talented like you has been a pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
He was really happy about your podcast. He was telling me about it immediately after I got out of the podcast. He was, you're not going to believe I just got out of this podcast. It was amazing, man. And I was like, oh, really? And he talked to me about it for like 45 minutes. And then he said, you should do it. I'm like, what? And then he told me about you and said, you know, you were such a nice guy and it was such a great experience. And he said, you should do it, Nico. I'm like, okay, man, sign me up. I'm excited now.
It's so interesting because it felt like it was like a fish out of water story. It's like, here he is, a very successful YouTuber, as you are, but coming onto a show that speaks about a lot of different kinds of things and then what your specialty is really fun for me because it gets to expose my guests a little bit to the other sides of their personality.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. That's great.
Now, when it go viral, without having to catch COVID, let's say, how would a show like mine that talks about food and kind of society and culture and psychology and psychedelics and things like that, how does something like this get to be bigger on YouTube? Is it going to be marketing by way of shorts or is it going to be cross marketing and promotion or what do you think?
So there's a lot of things that can do growth, but the thing with viral is It's not a do these 3 things and get viral because the person that watches viral content didn't know it was going to be viral either. Mm-hmm. No one really knows what's going to be viral unless you have that idea like, oh my God, I got a viral idea. So videos that go viral are things that attract an audience where everyone needs to know about this. Everybody needs to see this. So you notice how whenever you've been sent a viral video, it wasn't something you normally watch, but everybody's right. talking about it and everyone's sharing it. You're at the coffee shop and be like, yeah, like today I watched this. Do you see that viral video? Let me link it to you. They're able to retrieve it. They remember the name of the title. They're like, I'm going to go do. Yeah, it's this one. Bam, bam. And I sent it to your Facebook. So it's tough to find those. But if you're observant in our world and know what everybody's talking about or what a large amount of the people are talking about or thinking or the mood they're in. So let me give you an example. About a year ago, just under a year ago, if you made a video about 10 foods to eat while thinking about Chinese spy balloons, that would have been viral. That's the silliest title in the world. But right. you see what I did there? That's yeah. what everyone was thinking about.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you. That's already bursting some ideas in my head.
If you're making stuff for the small audience, that's not viral. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You need mm-hmm. to do that or you have no following. But something that's viral appeals to an extremely high amount of people out there. And as Scott would say, you open the funnel for more things right. to come in.
Nico, thank you so much. Tell everybody once again your YouTube channel and why they should watch you.
It's Nico Knows Tech. And if you are into computers, technology, consumer electronics, you'll definitely find something that will solve a problem for you. And if not, entertain you.
I love all the gadgets and all the stuff that you talk about and all the workarounds and the hacks and all that stuff. So thank you so much for having that your channel.
Thank I you really for appreciate having it. Me. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for, you know, letting me on after Scott went up there. I get to go after that. He opened.
I know he opened for you. Hey, one of these days, maybe we'll roll up our sleeves and we'll have some non-Chilean sea bass.
That'd be fantastic.
Thanks, man. We'll talk soon. I want to say aloha to you, which is going to sound familiar because you lived here.
It definitely is. Aloha to you too.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.